It's the Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 178, and here are your hosts, Adam Mangum and his brother, Matt Mangum. Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 178. Matt, there's a reason we don't usually do these right after games.
Yeah, and I think we're all about to find out what that reason is.
Yes, your potty mouth. No, it's me screaming at the television in my basement, and I think I woke up most of the Twin Cities.
Oh, that a boy.
Including my own children, so there you go. So, Matt, let's get right to it. 62 points given up by BYU in the second half. Describe how you're feeling right now without me having to do a lot of editing.
Angry. That was hard to see. I mean, it was a tale of two different games.
Yes.
Between the first half and the second half. And there was no answer in the second half.
Yes, the first half was BYU's best case scenario, or nearly best. I mean, I guess Collinsworth wasn't really rolling in the first half. The second half was BYU's worst case scenario, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's probably about as bad as they're going to play defensively. 62 points is, I'm not great at math, but that would be like giving up 120.
There will be games played in this tournament where a team will only score 62 points in the whole game.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There'll be a couple where they don't even do that. I would bet. Yeah, so it's kind of there. But let's focus on some good stuff, Matt. You and I had talked about earlier in the season about Tyler Haws having his moment. Now, of course, this isn't him having his moment because BYU lost, but they certainly did not lose because of Tyler Haws' effort.
No.
33 points, 5 boards, 5 assists, 5 of 9 from 3-point line, that's the part of his game that didn't really exist before this year was the long range, and I think he's answered that question. But Matt, Fisher and Haws combined for 20 field goals. The rest of the Cougars combined for 7, but it wasn't really offense that killed them, was it?
No, I mean, they scored 90 points.
Yeah, they scored 90 points. How many dunks can you give up in one half?
Oh, my gosh.
So
big dunks, too.
Big dunks. And easy dunks, right? Like, you know, our perimeter defense in the second half was quite poor. I would have been more comfortable letting them sit back there and continue chucking up threes. Besides Moody, there isn't anybody on their team that's worth guarding at the three-point line, but we let those guys, we jumped out at them and then let them drive in and dish for easy two-point buckets. Matt, you know that I am a card-carrying member of the Dave Rose fan club.
Yep.
I love Dave Rose.
You're not just a client, you're also the president.
Yes, yes. And
or is it the reverse? I don't remember.
I can't remember. But in this particular case, Matt, I have a couple of massive issues with the way this game was managed by Coach Rose.
Tell me more.
So my first one is Andrus and Sharp should never be on the floor at the same time ever again. Well, that won't happen because Sharp's leaving, but it shouldn't have never happened. They're both average rebounders, maybe below average at best, so they don't give you that. They're not great defenders, and Andrus, I think, has the possibility of being a good offensive player down the stretch, but he is not that now. And Sharp, most of the time, unless he's playing off of Collinsworth or one of the guards, is not a plus on the offensive side. So basically, you have given up two spots on the floor. Now, I know there were some foul troubles, but I go with 4 guards over an Andrus Sharp lineup. Agreed, or do you think I'm nitpicking?
Well, it's easy to say that you're nitpicking, right? Because I think that I don't know that this was part of the game plan, right? There was some foul trouble,
yes,
and some things that I think created that situation. I don't know that Dave Rose would describe that situation as ideal. I don't know that I think it'd be difficult to argue against what you're proposing here, which is a four-guard set.
Well, one of the things that I thought strange, Matt, with that was Jake Toulson played 6 minutes in the first half due to Kyle Collinsworth foul trouble. Now, Jake Toulson is not Kyle Collinsworth, but he is a big guard who can rebound, right? So he gives you, and he's a plus defender. He's not the quickest defender, but he's a good defender. He can give you some things there. He's not going to light up the scoreboard with points, at least at this stage in his career. The problem I have is Andrus plays here in the second half, Sharp in the second half. I just would have rather given some of those minutes to Toulson. Unfortunately for us, Winder is not whole. This game is totally different if Anson Winder plays 25 minutes.
I think that's definitely true.
So that's unfortunate. So the other issue I have with the game management was Anson Winder, who's clearly not 100%, gets subbed in on one of the last possessions of the game, and Collinsworth comes off. BYU has no timeouts, so they can't guarantee getting Collinsworth back in the game. They get the stop. They're coming back for a chance to tie the game, and Frank Bartley IV is the person bringing the ball up. Don't get a great look. I just think it's inexcusable, especially with Winder's health, for Collinsworth to have come off the floor in the last minute of the game.
Oh, I absolutely agree. You can't, in that situation, have Collinsworth on the bench. He's got to be on the floor, especially knowing that you don't have the timeout to stop play and get him back in. You've got to leave him out on the floor.
Yeah, and you decided to use the timeout with 1:20 left, which I probably wouldn't have used it there, but I don't think it's a terrible way to use that last timeout. I do think, though, that was a big play, and not having your point guard on the floor is pretty terrible. So, Matt, let's take the focus off the game for a second. Because, well, quite frankly, it's depressing. And let's talk about, we are starting to get into this with Tyler Hawes. What is Tyler Hawes' legacy? Obviously, he is the all-time leading scorer in BYU basketball history. He obviously has played in several NCAA tournaments. He's played with Jemmer. He's played with Collinsworth, some great teammates. What is his legacy to you?
I feel like Tyler Hawes is a Dan Marino. Right? Statistically awesome, clearly very talented. You know, you talk about he's the leading scorer in BYU history. He's one of the leading scorers in college basketball.
Yeah, he broke into the top 20, I believe, all-time scorers with his great output in this particular game.
You know, and so that's special. Those are all special things, and he's a special player. But there's still not a signature win or a signature run or something to really define the Tyler Hawes era, you know. So I kind of see him in that Dan Marino mold. Awesome, everybody knows he's awesome, but you know, couldn't ever win the big one. And I don't know what the big one is, right? What the equivalent here is that would have put him in that category. Is it? Winning a conference tournament, is it a deeper NCAA run? I think either of those two things would have done it.
Right. Yeah, it's a good comparison, and I actually think you know, being compared to Dan Marino is certainly no insult, right?
Oh, I don't mean that as an insult at all. I think it's a decent comparison.
Yeah, if you look at how his now, it's an unfair comparison, but the man he passed in the record books was Jimmer Fredette. Now, Tyler had a more consistent career than Jimmer, because for Jimmer's first season, for example, he didn't really, you know, he was a role player, right? And he didn't really become Jimmer until his sophomore year, and didn't really, really become Jimmer until his senior year. So his peak is just a lot higher than Hawes's, right? But Hawes was consistent. He was basically, in a lot of ways, the same player for four seasons, including one before his mission, and a really great season right off his mission. Maybe one of the best seasons off a mission of any BYU player ever in that 2012-2013 campaign. But I think you're right. It does lack that that signature moment or win, and maybe that's, like you said, a conference tournament win. Maybe it's the maybe it's a win in the NCAA tournament. Had they beat Ole Miss and then beat Xavier, then all of a sudden, you know, say he combines for close to 60 points in those two games, then that becomes his time, right?
Mm-hmm.
That becomes who he is. But that being said, Matt, if you were looking at the top starting five for BYU basketball history, does Haws make the list?
Yeah, that's a tough one.
So let's put it this way.
That's right.
Easy pickings, right? Jimmer is on the team, right?
Yeah, Jimmer's on the team. Ainge is on the team.
Ainge is on the team. So there you've got two, both guards, and Haws is either a guard or a forward, depending on how you wanna drop your lineup card. So let's just stick with players that you and I either saw or know a lot about, right? We're not going to go back to Dick Nemelka and some of those guys because we just don't know enough.
What about Kresemir?
Well, that's going back too, but gosh, I don't know if you can put a top five without him on it.
Right.
But of course, our dad would say the same thing about Nemelka. But you're not going to put him in over Ainge or Jimmer for sure, right, Haws?
No, yeah.
You're not going to put him in over Michael Smith. Play different positions, obviously.
Which is crazy because he scored more points in his career than any of these guys.
That's correct. That's correct. But there's more to basketball than scoring, right? Clearly, there's more. But, you know, you look at he was a okay rebounder. Not a great assist guy, 1.8 over the course of his career, which as much as he handled the ball is not great. But obviously his efficiency in scoring is one of the best in BYU history, and like you said, a top 20 scorer in NCAA history. I don't think he probably makes the top five for most folks. Recency bias aside. But that's not, I mean, that doesn't mean he didn't have a fantastic career and that one day he won't be getting a BYU Athletic Hall of Fame ceremony, right?
I mean, oh, I think he absolutely does. I mean,
that's easy.
One of the best to ever play at BYU.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. So Matt, looking forward at the team, at the players that return next year, obviously we've got Kyle Collinsworth is the big returner. Kafusi, watching him today, he's still got a long way to go defensively, Matt. I mean, he sometimes makes some of his help defense was bad. He did the in between where he didn't stop the jump out and stop the penetrator, but he didn't stay with his guy, which led to a few dunks. I still feel pretty optimistic about Kafusi's future. You?
I feel like I want to be optimistic about him because I love the Kafusis.
Yes, right.
But there are some real red flags when you watch him play in a game like tonight where, you know, he just kind of looks lost.
Yes, at times he definitely, and then he has those other times where he has an incredibly athletic block, right?
Right.
That make you think, oh, well, if he can get this put together, but he made a lot of improvement this year. Bartley, I when all of these perimeter guys fill the roster at BYU in the next few years, I don't think he's going to see a lot of minutes.
Yeah, you know, and I think when we did our season preview, he was one of the guys that I think we talked about as being a possible breakout player this year.
Yeah.
And I think we've seen I don't want to say he's peaked or whatever, but I think we've seen who Bartley is. I think we understand what the upside there is, and I think you're probably right.
Yeah, I don't know. I could be wrong. Certainly, I could be wrong. Worthington, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, he's going on a mission. To be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't play for BYU after his mission. There wasn't much there. His advanced stats put him as, this is going to sound harsh, but it's just how it is. His advanced stats at win shares per 40 minutes put him as one of the worst players in college basketball that played more than 300 minutes this past year. So he's definitely, he did not take the leap. But you look at some of these other guys, Toulson, Nixon, Nielsen, I mean, several of them are likely to be important components of next year. But really, it's the guys coming off of missions and some of the newbies that will really determine BYU's success. Is that a true or false statement for next year?
I think everybody feels that way. You know, the future is bright at BYU, but I think most of what we're all excited about wasn't on the floor tonight.
No, right. And Collinsworth will get a chance to play with some of these guys, and I think that will be great for them. I think that'll be great for everybody, really. A couple of tweet bag questions, Matt. Most of them are, well, not happy questions. Kurt Klein, that's at Kurt the Hurt 78. Is BYU going to beat Xavier on Thursday? ... Oh, wait. Hashtag
awkward.
F.
That's awkward.
Yeah. So I'm going to do these out of order a little bit. At Justin D. Sweeney asks, can we hire Bronco as D coordinator? Oops, wrong sport. They could have used some Bronco type defense, don't you think?
I'll tell you who we could have used was the other Kafusi.
Yeah. Well, if could have knocked a couple guys down, would have been good to have Bronson out there. Andre Hutchins, that's at AC_Hutchins, asks, why is being a BYU fan so difficult sometimes? Matt?
You know, listen, being a real fan of any team is difficult sometimes. That's part of what makes it fun. When you buy into and emotionally invest in a team, anytime you see something like where there's some promise, things look good, and it just kind of falls apart, that happens to everybody, to every program and every team at some point. And when you're emotionally invested, it hurts. But that's what makes this fun. That's why you come back for more, because you're a glutton for punishment. And we'll all do it again next year.
So 68 teams in the NCAA tournament, right?
Mm-hmm.
Only one will win. Probably close to a dozen will feel happy with how their teams perform. Fair?
Yep.
If you're a one seed and you don't get to the Final Four, it's a failure, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're Gonzaga this year, where that loss to BYU cost you a one seed, and then say they get bounced in the second round, failure, right?
Yep.
Being a sports fan, to your point, Matt, is hard. I would much rather be a BYU football fan than, say, a Cleveland professional football fan.
Oh, come on. Cleveland anything fan.
Well, yeah. You don't know. LeBron's back, so that could change. Just being a sports fan, like you said, it's the highs and the lows. When I was 8 years old, BYU won a national championship. And being an ignorant 8-year-old, I thought, well, BYU is the new powerhouse of college football, and it's going to run off a bunch of national championships, which, of course, was not the case.
No, it's the case. We're just still waiting for the second one.
Yes, still waiting for that. Don't call it a dynasty. But when the Patriots won in 2001, okay, was it 2001, the first Super Bowl?
Sure.
When the Patriots won,
it was that season, right?
It was that season, yes. I finally realized as an adult what it could feel like to win, right? And that's why you root for the team, is for that chance, that possibility, right? That VCU running to the Final Four from the first four, right? We do this. That's why we put ourselves through these games that end up feeling like somebody, peed in your Cheerios.
Yeah, you stick with the team because the day that they make the run, the day that they win and hang a banner, you feel like you were a part of something.
Yeah. And if you don't, then you're not, right?
Right.
because you don't get that emotional reward if you didn't put down the emotional capital. Look at us getting all serious on the Rise and Shout podcast.
It's pretty serial.
Yeah, yeah, something like that. So, Matt, there is some other BYU sports news besides this game that we've just kind of beaten to death here. Spring football is going on.
Oh, yeah.
And I wanted to get your thought on something. So this spring, Bronco has required his players to self-report penalties. And if they catch on film penalties that were not self-reported, there is some type of punishment system. What do you think about this?
I think it's weird.
I don't think it's weird. I think it's flipping awesome. That's right. I said flipping awesome.
Wow. Can we say that?
Sure. Sure we can. Well, I mean, a lot of people are going to mock me for it, but I think we can say it. So what makes it weird, Matt?
I understand the idea. You're trying to get players to focus on not committing a penalty. But I feel like they're, I don't know, I feel like there puts a little too much focus on it. And frankly, sometimes, say, on a pass interference or something, I mean, that could be a judgment call or, you know, on a holding and things. And I don't think, I just don't know if I want players to be that consumed with not committing certain penalties.
Yeah, yeah. I think this is the inevitable result of being one of the most penalized teams in the country last year.
You got to do something, right?
Right. So the other part is, I also think BYU was not the most disciplined team last year. And
what?
Yeah, I know. Newsflash. Hashtag breaking news. So I don't mind it. It is a little gimmicky. I'm with you. It's not. It is kind of a little weird, but I'm okay with it. Do you buy all this? You know, we're halfway through spring football. Do you buy this narrative that a lot of the reporters have picked up on, and Bronco is certainly saying in interviews that there's more leadership this year? Is there any way for us to actually know if that's true?
I don't think there's a way for us to know if that's true until we see him play a couple of games.
Right.
And I think there's a couple things that come along with that. You see a demeanor on the field. You see improved discipline among the players. And then you're also going to get you're going to get exposure to players and comments that they make in a different context. And I think when you get into that space, you'll see that. Well, something I think that really hurt this team last year was some of the guys that could have been in those leader positions were hurt or were hurt on and off. And it's a lot harder, especially for some types of players, to maintain that leadership role when they can't be in the huddle.
Right, right.
You look at Taysom. I mean, he wasn't even at the games, right? His injury was so bad. But in other situations, you may have a player that's dinged up and he's going to be at practice or he's going to be on the sidelines. And sometimes some players can still step up from that position if they were already in a leadership role. But I don't think we really had an opportunity for anybody to fill some of those gaps that were created as a result of injury and other things. And there was a vacuum.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you'll see it. You mentioned in those first few games, I want to see players – not screaming at other players, because I don't think that necessarily works a lot of the times, but certainly more correction, if you will. You know,
you want it to appear like they are accountable to one another.
Yes, yes, and you know, some of that can be overrated. You know what I mean? Like they must have good leaders because they're winning. Their leadership must be terrible because they're losing. Right? I mean,
right.
That's the kind of lazy way out of this. But that being said, I mean, I think we all believe that the greatest teams BYU has had, or any college football team has had, typically have leaders on both sides of the ball, and it maybe even within special teams, who inspire and get the most out of their teammates.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely think that is definitely true. So, Matt, well, this is going to be a shorter podcast tonight, mainly because both of us need to get to sleep and It's just kind of, well, I don't know how you recover from this, Matt, but we always do, and then we'll watch a bunch of basketball games this weekend. And so let's talk about that for a second before we leave. Who do you have in your final four?
So I'm not done with my bracket yet.
What? That's ridiculous.
You don't have to officially turn the bracket in until tip off on Thursday.
Okay. I see what you're doing. So,
So I, you know, that. So who do I have? You know, I think you got Kentucky, Virginia. This isn't final for me yet. This isn't final for me. But I like Kentucky, Virginia, Wisconsin.
Kentucky, Virginia, Wisconsin. Kentucky, Virginia, Wisconsin. I've got Kentucky, Arizona, Virginia, Gonzaga.
See, I can't decide in that South region who it is.
Yeah, the South region is tough. Who did you say you had out of coming out of there?
I didn't list a team there yet because
Oh, you
I
didn't.
couldn't decide. So I think that you know, I want to go with Duke, but I feel like that's a safe pick.
Well, Duke has the potential to win this whole thing or get beat in the second round.
Yeah.
I think they are just one of those teams this year, and I've watched a fair amount of their games. They're just kind of up and down. I mean, the cool story, quite frankly, that I'm rooting for, and most people probably will disagree with me, excuse me, I want Kentucky to run the table. I want Kentucky to win. I think it'd be cool to have another undefeated champ.
Have an undefeated champion.
I think so.
I think they've got a really good shot at doing that. When you look at, you know, who they'd have to beat inside of their bracket, I think they got a pretty good draw there in that
Yes.
field. So their chances of getting to the Final Four, I think, are really, really good. And, you know, and then you got in some of these others, you know, in the East, you got Villanova and Virginia. That I think they're if they end up playing each other, that's a tough road because
That'll
you've
be an
also got you got
awesome.
Louisville. You got Louisville in there. I think Louisville's solid.
Oklahoma's pretty good.
Even like North Carolina State is an 8 seed. I mean, they're pretty good.
That's the East, I think, is a tough bracket. And if Villanova and Virginia play in the Elite Eight, what a heck of a matchup. That should be something that's a ton of fun to watch. Ton of fun to watch. So, are you disagreeing with me with Kentucky as the ultimate champion of all this?
No, I think Kentucky probably wins it. You know, it's just I'm just not sure who they're going to end up facing in the finals.
Yeah. It's hard to say. It is hard to say. I mean, this should be fun. And by the way, if I'm picking your other favorite team on the bracket, chances are they're probably going to lose.
Wah, wah.
I do not have good. I have won fantasy football leagues, baseball leagues, NBA basketball leagues. I do not have a great track record with the NCAA tournament. It's just what it is.
It's hard. It's
It
very
is hard.
difficult to do well. I think
Yes.
almost everybody is terrible at this because the problem is if you could restart it every round, I think it would be a little bit different. You know, but the problem is once there's an upset in the first or second round, like you're host.
Yes.
You know, UAB beats Iowa State, which nobody expects, right? And then everybody's host because nobody expected Iowa State to lose to UAB or probably in the next round.
Right. Just messes things up. But the thing is, once I set my bracket, I don't really root for my bracket. This loss gave me hiccups.
Yeah, the hiccups thing is kind of freaking me out right now. But no, you can't do that. I mean, I'm not emotionally attached. I'm emotionally attached to two teams in this tournament. Other than that, I just want to play, well, now just one team. But other than that, I just want to watch an obscene amount of college basketball.
Yes.
That's all I want to do.
Percent
Friday,
chance. Purdue's going to upset Kentucky. Woo! Go Boilers!
that's going to be a tall order.
No, that's not going to happen. But Yeah, well, here's hoping for some great basketball. Good gravy. What is with these
What is
hiccups?
going on? Are you okay?
I don't
Is
know.
everything all right? Do I need to call for backup?
You might. You might. Apparently, I'm allergic or something to BYU losses. All right. Well, thanks again for tuning in to the Rise and Shop podcast. We'll be back next week to talk some college hoops, some college hoops, spring football. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you next time. Sorry, we'll catch you next time. Go ahead, man.
Go Cougars.